I don't want there to be any sort of well-intentioned but undermining of the fact that when we say contact five, and there are five options under roofing, we want them to contact five if they're available. And so if they only contact three, but they're the low bidder, in the past we have rejected those.
Except, but I think it's important to apply here.
You really have.
No, my only point, Sam, is if, I'm sorry.
But I really think it's important, though, not to get esoteric about this debate at this point.
And, well, you have to allow us a little esotericness.
Well, but if there were three subcontractors under asphalt paving, when they went to the code and they contacted those three, I hope the argument isn't, yeah, but there were only three and you should have creatively figured out how to cull the list.
No, I hear what you're saying. Yeah. And again, you've said it a couple times. I think it's compelling to say it says search by NIGP code.
Right.
I just want to be clear. This is a big organization and lots of contracts go out. Not all contracts limit it to NIGP searches. Sometimes they just say you have to contact five certified firms.
But this one did.
I understand.
Okay.
I've got someone else over here who's made a different point. Okay.
I just
want to address.
I didn't mean to take us off track because what I think I was saying is probably a non-controversial. I just didn't say it the right way. Jim, what's if the protestor in this case disagrees with our determination, their next option is to go to court?
Correct.
And raise an issue of what does substantial compliance mean?
Correct.
And test that against whatever has been our historical practice.
Yes, although a historical practice doesn't really make any difference. The judge will look at it based on the contents of this particular specification.
Any additional counsel discussion? All right, Carla, please call the roll.
Fish?
Well, we're about to set a record here in terms of counsel, the duration of a counsel hearing. And we're in almost our sixth hour with some other very important topics to follow. But I want to first, thank everybody for sticking around. I know that our calendar has inconvenienced a lot of people here, and we appreciate people staying and testifying and illuminating this issue. This is, even I think for seasoned members of the council and new members, you're getting the sense that we are struggling with this because it's complicated and we wanted to get all the facts, make sure we understood the law. But for me, it came together towards the end, particularly under the questioning of the second attorney on this panel, Commissioner Leonard, on some of the points. And what has to me been the deciding point is that the question for me is, did the winning bidder comply with the good faith effort division of work sheet requirements on the face? And that the first question is, can they meet the requirements that are shown? And the testimony, the evidence that's been put before us, and I don't know that there's been any contradiction, is that they did. They went on a website. They assembled the names of MWESB contractors and contacted them. That actually technically is what we require. We may revisit this question at some point to talk about whether this requirement should be a procedural or substantive requirement, and what the law provides in that area. But it appears to me, based on what we've heard, I don't think it's been contradicted, that they did what they are required to do. And I agree with a number of the comments that are made by my colleagues that we do not require people to go above the legal floor that we've established for them to follow. The fact that a local contractor went further in developing a list is laudable, but it was not required, at least on the face of the documents we've been presented with. So, as I understand the question on the challenge is, were the requirements of the good faith effort met? And I believe that the evidence is they were. So I agree with Commissioner Leonard. I don't believe we even get to the question of whether there's been substantial compliance. I'm satisfied there's been compliance. And the question of whether it's a local contractor or, you know, which labor organizations they're contracting with, people are free to put that in the record, but I don't believe that's relevant to what our decision is. We have rules about prevailing wages and kinds of compensation. I think it's a narrow question. I think it's been narrowed through the testimony and the discussion, which has been very helpful for me. We have a low bid that complied with the good faith efforts, And there's nothing before us that says that they didn't comply, and I don't believe we have to get to substantial compliance. I think they have complied. And I think lost in this discussion is that the winning bidder also, has achieved a remarkable rate of contracting with MWESB firms, the tune of 75%, which is 40% above what the target was the city set. So I don't want that to be lost in this, because I think that substantively is what we also ought to be acknowledging and celebrating. That's what we want to promote. Now, this leads me inescapably to reject the appeal, but it's not based on anything that Moore has presented. They have presented a lot of information that confirms that they're good corporate citizens, and we hope they continue to bid on projects at the city. But on the question that we're asked to decide today, I'm satisfied that the evidence is that there's been compliance and therefore that the appeal should be denied. So I vote aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I like Roy Moore. I like many of the people who are representing NUCA who are here today. But I do have to agree in this case that I think that Mountain Cascade complied or substantially complied given the narrow instructions they were given to use the NIGP codes to contact the list of available minority women and ESB contractors. So I think that this is really, as Commissioner Fish said, I think it does come down to a very narrow question. I think there was good faith effort and, indeed, if not compliance, abundantly substantial compliance. So I vote aye.
Leonard?
I've worked very hard since I've been on the council to have rules written, and specifically these kinds of bidding situations that prefer local providers of goods and services. And Jeff has some bruises on his body that I think prove that point. Most recently was purchasing of automobiles. In the past, I've sat with him, and we've developed a set of criteria in order to prefer Oregon-grown canola to buy to convert into biodiesel. We were very creative in developing that RFP, frankly, in order to figure out a way to preference local providers. But this is the most difficult part of my job, which is to having fought on the policy end to get things in place that are objective, that give preference to local providers, but once those policies are in place to apply them, I have to do that fairly. And I have to, at the end of the day, go home and look at myself in the mirror and know that I applied the rules fairly. I will tell you, Mr. Moore, if there was any way that could be determined to give you the bid, I would have found it, and I was looking for that. I'm afraid that it's not there, and really for the reasons Commissioner Fish articulated. I think there was rules that were promulgated that were clear that Mountain Cascade followed being awarded the contract. I don't want to diminish their good work in getting qualified minority women and emerging small business contractors using labor con. I appreciate that, but I do prefer to have local provide local contractors with work where I can. To the extent that we can learn something from this in future contracts, I'd like to do that, that are let. But given what the facts are of this particular bid, I find myself in no place other than to award the contract to Mountain Cascade. Aye.
Fritz? I greatly appreciate the discussion, both of my colleagues and of everybody here. Thank you for staying so long and for giving good testimony. It shows the importance of process as well as product, and that we do pay attention to details. The outcome is that this 34% minority and women-owned businesses, there is only 0.1% women-owned businesses, and I appreciate the fact that Mayor Adams pointed that out to me. It was good to see the representative from the operating engineers here and to recognize that in construction projects, we have a challenge in finding and making sure that we find women as well as minority-owned businesses. I believe that it's in substantial compliance. I listened to all the testimony. I have some questions about the specific numbers, but with this number of outreach, I appreciate Mayor Adams pointing out that the outreach is important as well as the product, and the contacting people to make sure that we're getting the bids is important. And this has been a good learning experience for me, and I continue to be interested in the issue of contracts and how we do them when the council weighs in. I'm pleased that there are 80% local workers in the Mountain Cascade workforce, and I appreciate the union folks who are here today, and I vote aye.
Adams.
Well, the other cities' RFPs have required outreach to certified firms. And so if that was what is defined in another RFP, but a contractor only submitted based on an NIGP search and therefore tried to make the case that their efforts just with an NIGP search, when we asked for contact of 5 certified firms, that therefore their search was complete, but they missed people, I would not be convinced. But because this does say, quote, search by NIGP code, enter the NIGP code listed below for subcontractors, I have, you know, no choice but to accept the fact that this particular RFP narrowed the definition of what it meant to make a contact and the list that was going to be used for determining whether or not a contact had been made. If there are 3 people in a category and 3 firms were contacted, then that, under the way I read this and based on the testimony, then I think that constitutes success under what's been written on this particular description of a good faith effort divisions of work. However, just to be clear, I've always been nitpicky on this because it's in the nitpickiness that we ensure that all the possible contractors are contacted as part of our good faith effort. That's one of the few tools we have. Out of that contact, hopefully comes more work for certified firms. Thank you for all the testimony. It was very compelling. Aye. Can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 664?
Accept bid of West Tech Construction, Inc. for the Foster Sewer Replacement Project for $1,098,945.
Mr. Baer.
Before you, is a recommendation to Council recommending award to the West Tech Construction, who is a local Portland-based business, for the BES Foster Sewer Replacement Project in the amount of
$1,098,945.
We did receive 9 bids. They do have a 28.2% MWESB subcontractor participation rate. And they're in full compliance with our business license, EEO, and equal benefits.
Questions from Council. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on Council Item 664? This is a purchasing item. I need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Been moved and seconded to approve the purchasing report contained in 664. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 664 is approved. Can you please read the title for Emergency Ordinance 665?
Grant revocable permits to the Portland Rose Festival Association, Foundation, to perform activities relating to Portland Rose Festival annual celebration from May 22 through June 14, 2009.
I just want to make it really clear that I'm going to oppose this unless there is a neon rose that twinkles.
Well, it is
involved with it somewhere. Commissioner Leonard.
It is interesting that you said that because I park my car on the east side of the river and walk over in the morning and back at night. And walking over this morning, I happened by sheer coincidence to watch the rose be installed on the roof.
Oh.
So it is there. And I know Jeff didn't see it because he was here.
That's correct. I was here. I can tell you that all local stations were there watching it be and filming it being built, being installed.
Yes.
This is an annual formality, but is there anything either one of you would like to highlight for us? Is there any reason why we should vote no?
No, Mayor. I'm Thomas Lanham, the Operations Division Manager for the Revenue Bureau. And the only thing I'd like to point out is I think that this is the least controversial item that I've ever had the opportunity to sit before this body on, and it must be Christmas.
Hallelujah.
To my right, I think you all know Jeff Curtis, the executive director of the Rose Festival Foundation. And in brief, this is a housekeeping ordinance, and it would basically allow for the Starlight Parade, the Grand Flora Parade, the Junior Rose Parade, various street closures, street banners, et cetera. Many bureaus have been engaged, and Allison Madsen, our special events coordinator, has worked very hard with those partners to get this done, so she should be thanked.
Thank you.
Jeff, do you have any concern that that you've scheduled this program so that the grand finale actually precedes the debut of the Rose Festival?
No. No concerns.
Fireworks, the concert, the address by Commissioner Leonard, the light switch, the rollout, that happens before actually we begin the Rose Festival. Are you afraid that might take away from some of the other programming?
No, I'm not, to be clear. It's going to be I wanted to say briefly, and my message to you is brief but important, something that gets lost in the discussion about this is our annual rite of passage, me to come up and thank council for your support. But what gets lost in the messaging, and there's some excitement about the Rose and our new building, but is the significance and power of special events in general. Never mind the Rose Fest, any special event. I want to thank Commissioner Fish for your leadership, what you did with the Washington Park events, the summer concert series. Special events are more important now in a tough economy than ever. It is a chance for our community, and it's particularly the Rose Festival, to come together and celebrate everything that's good about where we live, about our neighbors, and celebrate our human spirit. And that's, in a tough economy, when you're making tough decisions, when you deal with tough situations, and people at home are dealing with tough economic conditions, we can take time out, and we can come together as a community. We can go to the parade. We can go down to the waterfront. We can go watch our rose be lit and just take time out and really celebrate this special place we call home. So that is what's very significant about what we're about to do. It gets lost in some of the major details and the great events that take place. And you heard all about those events with our court presentation today. But it's really that simple message of bringing people together that the Rose Festival has been doing for 102 years. And we're ready to light the rose, and we're ready to kick it off in 48 hours. Well, thank you.
You know, Randy and I compared notes, and, you know, it's not well known, has not been publicized, that he raised a lot of private money to make this whole thing happen. And we compared notes on some of our phone calls with people in the business community. I think they were the same. You get a principal on the phone, and they'd say, worst economy in my lifetime. We're tapped out. We're fully expensed for the year. What do you need?
Exactly.
And that's he raised tens of thousands of dollars to cover the portion that most of the costs at McCall's, likewise at the park, and that says something about our public-spirited businesses and individuals.
No question about it.
So, we need to probably right here stop and thank Ramsey Signs for stepping up to the plate and donating the design, the engineering, and the manufacturing, and today the installation of this what is really a very beautiful product that they produced. I think it's beyond what most of us thought it would even look like. They did a good job. And I hope that the council will remember, and I think Commissioner Fritz, you're, as I recall, your anniversary is on Friday.
We're out of town, yeah. It's been long planned.
And so Mr. Fritz is going to miss Friday, but
sorry,
I know.
It was 27 years ago. If I'd have known, I'd have planned it for a different day.
Well,
okay. You do anything to disassociate yourself from this event.
Yeah, yeah. But I know Commissioner Fish is actually going to, with the one of the princesses.
Queen Marshawna Williams.
And we'll flip the switch to light the rose. Commissioner Mayor Adams will give the headline remarks before the lighting of the rose. We're going to have
limited to 2 minutes or 3 minutes, Randy?
Whenever he wants.
Okay, two.
And
two. I need good rose quotes.
The evening will start off at 8 o'clock. And I know that everybody listening will be shocked to hear that the evening will start off with music by Curtis Salgado and his world-renowned band. At 10 o'clock, we will light the rose, and at 10:15, we will have fireworks.
That's correct. We'll have some speaking and some special presentations at 10 o'clock. The rose will light, and the fireworks will go over the Willamette right after when the rose lights. It's going to be a very, very special evening and historic for our community.
The fountain has just been, the historic fountain that's part of McCall has been covered up. People didn't know it was there for decades, has been restored. It was actually filled with water yesterday when I went over. It's going to be a really magical evening. Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Anyone here wishes to testify on 665?
No one signed up.
All right, please call the roll.
Fish?
Look forward to tomorrow night. Look forward to Friday night.
It's going to be a long 24 hours if you get there tomorrow.
And Jeff, we've said this before, but this action marks a turning point in the relationship between the city and the Rose Festival. And the city has benefited over the years from the participation and involvement of what the Rose Festival does for our community. But now going forward, we're partners. And we have said through the arrangement on the McCall's building, the neon sign, and many other things that we want this to be a partnership and that we are committed to your success going forward. And I appreciate the fact that you've been willing to take a look at the whole Rose Festival programming and think creatively about how to update it and how to continue to broaden the appeal and broaden the base of appeal in our community to this wonderful festival. So good job. We look forward to working with you going forward, and I urge everyone within the listening to this, including Mayor Katz, to pencil in Friday night for the event, because it's going to be great. Aye.
Leonard.
So there, in my job, people ask me, how do you like your job? And I say, well, I have things I have to do, and I don't know that I would qualify them as likable, but there are things that one must do, and there are things I get to do. And because of Mayor Adams' graciousness, he has designated me as the liaison to the Rose Festival. That's something I get to do. And there is nothing I enjoy more, even with some of the controversial issues Jeff and I have tackled, along with Commissioner Fritz before she was even on council. I've always felt that it was really a privilege to try and make the Rose Festival be what I remember it being as growing up, this very special, magical event that was unique of all special events. I mean, I know Jeff knows this, and he has been magnanimous as characterizing all of these various events as special events. The Rose Festival does not qualify as a special event. It is part of the soul of the city. We are identifying the location of that soul as we speak that will reside within the John Yon building and be designated from here on after by all who see it as the keeper of the one event that unites Portlanders, that being the Portland Rose Festival. I'm looking forward actually to next year a lot, because I think we'll be able to consolidate a lot of the big things we've done in this following year and the work that Jeff and I are going to do together. And Jeff, by the way, has been a great guy to work with. I've very much enjoyed getting to know Jeff and working on the various things that he and I work on. And they are one busy organization. It's dizzying to be around them when they're engaged in preparing for the Rose Festival, because it's I don't think any of us appreciate how complicated and multifaceted it is. And Sue is part of the foundation. She's one of the, what is the proper designation, Sue?
Actually, I'm part of the Royal Rosarians.
The Royal Rosarians.
Not which, just any Royal Rosarian either. Give them your full, what's going to happen next?
I will be the first woman prime minister in October.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's fabulous. I even like the Rose Festival better now. So that's really cool. So it's going to be a fun year. I've looked at the long-range forecast, as I know Jeff does every morning, bright and early. The weather is going to be great for the Rose Festival this year. And I can't wait for the events to get kick off Friday night. Aye.
Fritz?
I appreciate Commissioner Leonard's comment about the things we get to do. I got to hang out with the Royal Rosarians at the State Ball on February 14th, and I got to hang out with the Rose Princesses at the 82nd Avenue Parade and also at the St. John's Parade. And the Rose Festival is all about people. It's about the people of Portland and the people of Portland who have been celebrating this for around a century. And indeed, this ordinance has come to the Council for around a century, and I feel honored to be here to be part of this great event, this series of events that is part of Portland. The International Festivals and Events Association honored the Rose Festival internationally as the best festival in the world in 2007 out of 3,000 entries. Due to our environmental responsibility, commitment to arts, youth, and education, volunteerism, and a rich floral heritage. You don't get much more rich floral heritage than the Rose Parade. So thank you so much for all you do, and I'm very happy to participate this year as a city commissioner. Aye.
Adams?
Well, it's great to see all the changes that are going on and the strength and partnership between the city and the Portland Rose Festival. I want to commend Commissioner Leonard for spearheading that on our behalf. And as I said to the princesses this morning at our breakfast. Portland, it's time to get your rosaria on. Aye.
Got to work on that one.
By the way, great selection on Jack McGowan.
Yes.
It's appropriately that Jack, given it's a solve Starlight Parade, too, right?
So. All right, can you please read the item 666?
Update and revise the private-for-hire transportation regulations to better reflect the industry and the regulatory role of the city.
This is a second reading vote only. Please call the roll.
Fish.
So, Sue, since you and I spoke the other day, I just want to memorialize a couple of points. First of all, I'm new to this issue. One of my colleagues said that this is one of the biggest can of worms we deal with. This is one of the most complicated issues, and you, with some trepidation, try to insert yourself. So I appreciate the work has been done to come up with this balanced package, but I also understand that there are a lot of people who are constituents who have some heartburn over various pieces. And when I was visited recently by some hotel operators, one of my messages to them was, come earlier upstream and engage us on some of these things, because there are some issues that are foreign to me, and I don't have any oversight over this bureau, direct oversight. But, Sue, you and I had a chance to talk, and I just want to put on the record that a request has been made that in selecting a representative from the tourism industry, which is going to be up for appointment shortly, that you consider, from Travel Portland, Tri-County Lodging, and any suggestion that the hotel industry would have, because they have a big dog in this fight, would like to be represented and heard. That seems to me to be a fair request. There are some concerns about, under the new rules, whether we're making it so hard for some of the frequent flyers at some of these hotels to engage town cars, as to whether it just essentially becomes prohibitive. And what I've asked is that in the next 6 months or whenever it's convenient, you come back and just give us a sense of, is this working and are there any unintended consequences? I think we owe that at least to the industry to monitor it, to see whether it's meeting the goals that we've identified. With those two caveats, this has been a very thoughtful discussion. I compliment the mayor for breaking it out over three different hearings, because I think it's given people a lot of opportunities to come and be heard. Not everyone's going to be happy with what we're doing today, but on balance, it seems like the right direction, and you've left some other things for later determination. And I think the pedicab issue is something I have a particular interest in, because I may not have been alone in having been somewhat surprised to learn how lax the regulatory system is for pedicabs. And I in no way want to limit the growth of that industry, because I think it could be a particularly iconic, unique Portland thing. But the notion that, you don't have to have insurance or be licensed to operate while also being on city streets, I think would come as a surprise to some of the people who actually contract for those rides. Sue, thank you for all the courtesies you've extended to me and the time educating me about this issue and all those who testified to help us understand their point of view. I'm going to vote aye.
Seltzman?
Well, I'm pleased to support this as amended. I am pleased. I think Commissioner Fritz last time added the provision that caps on pedicabs could be appealed to the City Council. That's
going to add that.
We're going to add.
When the moratorium comes back. Sorry.
Okay.
It's not supposed to be.
Okay, I think that's a good provision. I appreciate the council's support of my amendment to establish an ad hoc committee to look at pedicab issues and to come back to either revisions to code or perhaps even a separate code chapter on that angle. And I do think that this is probably it's a well thought out process intensive issue, and I think that the Revenue Bureau has done a good job of guiding the discussion, coming up with a modernized code for modern times. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, as I said before, this is a fascinating area, and it was one that I greatly enjoyed learning about when I was assigned the responsibility of overseeing this regulatory function of the city. And I really came to appreciate the delicate balance that has to happen to make sure that our taxi industry not only survives but thrives. And I recognized, along with those that work at the Bureau of Licenses, that to do that, we have to make sure that we don't regulate greatly the taxi cab industry, but then not regulate competing interests who then take away business from that industry and then are able to thrive unregulated. So you have to find the balance in there. If we don't have that right now, I join with Commissioner Fish and wanted to revisit that and make sure that we do find that balance, because it is a delicate balance. But I think that Sue and her team has done a good job in striking that balance here, and I greatly appreciate their focus on finding that balance. So I'm very happy to support this approach. Aye.
Fritz? So, as Commissioner Lennon just said, these regulations are intended to provide equity between taxis that have to provide service 24/7, 365, and other private-for-hire transportation options that don't have to follow those rules. I'm very pleased to support moving forward with this. The code is a good start that will be further refined, and I'm comfortable with the committees that are being set up to do that. So I want to thank all the citizens who participated, either sending us emails, calling, meeting with folks in our offices, and participating in the hearings that we had, commending the staff and the committee that worked so hard on this. Commissioner Leonard, for your previous work, knowledge, leadership on this, and Mayor Adams for leading this current process. It's really good work, and it was long and hard coming. I know there was a lot more background work that wasn't even obvious at the City Council hearing, so thank you very much. Aye.
Adams.
Sue and Frank and the whole team, Shane, thank you for your work on this. This is tough work, not very glorious, not very sexy, but incredibly important. We're pleased with the changes that were made by my colleagues at the last meeting, in addition to subcommittee for petty cabs reporting to the overall committee, which I think will help us refine and nurture that industry. We want it to grow and succeed. Aye. All right. Can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 667?
Authorized grants to 5 Portland school districts for out-of-school hours youth programs.
Mayor, this is a relatively non-controversial matter, but the two documents in your packet have two small glitches. The first is that this was originally intended to be on the consent agenda and was put on the regular agenda by mistake, but that's, you know, we're still going to take it up. The second is, if you look at the ordinance, apparently my senior colleagues at Parks are so dissatisfied with my leadership that they've listed Commissioner Saltzman as the commissioner in charge. And but those points
aside. Be afraid.
Detail freak.
How long this has been going on?
I'm just beating Amanda to the punch here.
That's right.
On the merits, this would authorize grants to 5 school districts in Portland for out-of-school hours youth programs. It is funded out of the levy. These are standard budgeted grants. These are longstanding grants, which we've been doing for over 5 years. The grants are equitably awarded based on enrollment of students. They are dedicated to before and after school enrichment and recreation programs. And in the case of Portland Public Schools, a portion of their money goes to certain sports programs, including golf, tennis, and swimming. The ordinance speaks for itself. We didn't think there was a necessity of a presentation, and I would urge your approval.
Anyone here wishes to testify in this matter? Unless there's additional council discussion, Carla, would you please call the roll?
This is a non-emergency.
We will set it over till next, or moves to next week for council vote. Thank you. Can you please read the title for the previous, or for emergency ordinance 669?
Adopt findings, authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process to the Bureau of Purchases at City Code 3.534.150, and authorize a contract with Williams and Dame Development, Inc., to construct a Green Street facility.
And this is a, this had been heard before while I was gone?
No, it hasn't. Okay. I guess I need to give a quick intro.
Okay.
This is a This ordinance will allow for the construction of a green street at Northwest 16th and Pettigrove. We're providing a $40,000 grant to the developer, an amount not to exceed, for the construction of this facility. We are asking to exempt construction of this green street from the competitive bidding process because the developer has agreed to add this work. The developer is Dames and Moore. Add this work to the current private project there under construction. That's why this is an emergency ordinance, and that's why I ask for your support.
For a sole source?
I guess it is a sole source, yes.
Oh, I made him say it. Any discussion from council?
He caught me.
I did. Anyone wishes to testify? Let's see. Can you please call the roll on this item?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
So I usually am concerned about sole source contracts. This one adds to a current construction project, so it makes it a much lower cost than putting it out to bid separately, and the total cost of the project is not to exceed $40,000. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. It's approved. Could you please read Council Calendar Item 670?
Accept a subrecipient grant award in the amount of $14,030 from the Three Rivers Land Conservancy originating from the Oregon Department of Agriculture for control of invasive garlic mustard species.
Commissioner Saltzman, I assume this is a good thing?
It's a good thing. We're accepting a grant from the Oregon Department of Agriculture through the Three Rivers Land Conservancy to support the city's garlic mustard control efforts.
Anyone wishes to testify on 670? Any council discussion on 670?
A quick question. Is there going to be any notice to neighborhoods when the spraying is going to be done? Or how will they know when the spraying is being done?
I honestly don't have the answer to that, but we can certainly get that to you.
I'm sure there will be an answer from your good perks.
Yes, sure, we'll make sure.
Environmental services.
Sure, they do have some notice.
Please call the roll on 670.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 670 is approved. Can you please read the title for Emergency Ordinance 671?
Authorize application to Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board for a grant in the amount of $100,000 for construction of Tryon Creek Confluence Habitat Enhancement Project.
Commissioner Saltzman.
This ordinance authorizes the city to apply for a $100,000 grant from the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board for the Tryon Creek Confluence Habitat Enhancement Project.
Discussions from council? Anyone wishes to testify on Emergency Ordinance 671? Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 671 is approved. Please read the title for Emergency Ordinance 672.
Amend contract with West Yost for engineering services for additional work and compensation for the Outfall 27 Selwood Combined Sewer Overflow Control Project.
Commissioner Saltzman.
West Yost Associates is working with BES on the design of sewer projects for control of CSOs at Outfall 27 and Selwood. We originally contracted with them, and part of that contract, we're modifying this contract. I lost my train of thought here. It is an amendment to an existing contract. Given the need to get this project underway, I'm supporting it.
So this is an expansion of an existing contract?
Existing contract.
Discussions from council? Anyone wishes to testify on Emergency Ordinance 672? Carla, would you please call the roll on 672?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz.
My understanding is this amendment and the increased cost is because the Bureau was responsive to neighborhood concerns about the location of the pump station, so I'm pleased to vote aye.
Adams.
Aye. 672 is approved. Can you please read the title for Emergency Ordinance 673?
Authorize the assessment of $65,600 for a fire watch at 418 Southwest Washington Street, Portland, Oregon.
Commissioner Leonard.
John, this is another ordinance for precisely the same reasons as the prior one we heard for the Greek Cuisina. John Knorr, Fire Marshal for the City of Portland, is here.
Yes, John Knorr, Fire Marshal. I didn't really have much to add. I just was here to clarify any questions you have. The fire watch is ongoing. The original one that you voted on in May was for up through mid-December, and these are the costs for mid-December up through the date, and I don't have it in front of me, I believe, through March 26th. And the fire watch is actually still ongoing as we've gone to codes hearing, and the administrative law judge set it over to June 19th, so we're still in process there. This is to continue to for the city to collect the money owed to it for the provision of the fire watch.
Chief Knorr, the last time we had a similar matter before us involving this establishment, we had an appeal, lots of witnesses, letters. Has there been notice, proper notice given of this proceeding today?
Yes. Mr. Pappas was sent a letter by our office stating, I have a copy of one stating that he would, for last week, and it was held over for 1 week to today.
Has he filed any challenge to this?
He has not, not that I'm aware of. It, a city codes hearing officer late last month, late April, heard the beginnings of an appeal of this process going through a codes hearing process, which is done through the Bureau of Developmental Services. It's separate from our fire bureau process. The hearings officer basically used up all of the time there, and the hearings officer held it over until June 19th to hear the rest of the case.
And he can get complete relief through that proceeding on the fire watch and an adjustment of the fees if he's seeking that?
Prospectively.
I believe that he believes there's a process there that it can be. I'm familiar with the Fire Code Board of Appeal that I deal with. I'm not familiar with BDS's code hearings officer, but as my understanding from a gentleman at BDS, that this is an avenue at which Mr. Pappas can seek to either get relief or be ordered to be responsible for him.
Thank you.
Mr. Pappas did come in and held a meeting with me at my request, seeking assistance through Portland Development Commission or other bureaus that I have oversight over, seeking assistance to sort of address some of the challenges of his building, and we're looking at that, just for the record. Any other discussion regarding 673? This is an emergency. Is anyone in the room wishes to testify on emergency ordinance 673? Carla, can you please call the roll?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
673 is approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance 674?
Amend and clarify provisions of the Campaign Finance Fund.
Congratulations, Yvonne, on your resounding victory last night.
Yes.
Thank you. You'll have to pardon me. I'm exhausted. I was up all night waiting for the last vote to come in.
Was it here? We are initiating a formal inquiry into the 600 people that did not support you in this race.
I already did that.
There's been some claims of voter fraud or misconfusion or something, and we're gonna take swift action.
Well, thank you. I'm LaVon Griffin-Blade. I'm the interim city auditor, and here with me today is Andrew Carlstrom, who is the city elections officer. And this is really my first official presentation to council, and we're here to present draft changes to Chapter 2, Point 10 of City Code, which covers the Campaign Finance Fund. The changes reflect the April 29th recommendations from the Citizen Campaign Commission, feedback from council and the city attorney, as well as other subsequent discussions and research. I really want to take a second just to thank Andrew for his diligence and care and hard work in pulling this draft together. I happen to know that this is a very complex program, mind-boggling, in fact, in complexity, and I'm trying as quickly as I can to come up to speed in the nuance and history, but there will be questions that you may ask that I will not be able to answer, and I'm counting on Andrew to help me out there. So I also want to say that I view my office's role as making sure that objective, reasonable, and practical recommendations are supplied to council in the draft ordinance. And I base that on our charge presented in the charter and code as well as my professional standards. But the final decision, of course, on this matter is up to you. I would like to give you just a brief overview of some of the changes included in the draft ordinance revisions. First of all, provisions for the exploratory period were made consistent throughout the code. It includes a start date for the exploratory period for the May 2010 primary election, which is the day after this ordinance is approved by council. We changed the date for the declaration of intent to January 15th for regular elections. We changed the qualifying periods. So for regular primary elections, the qualifying period is the first day to file for office through the last business day of January. For special nominating elections, it's the first day to file for office through the last day to file for office. We clarified or added definitions, particularly for special election events. We tightened administrative rules to give the auditor the authority to investigate alleged violations and to implement specific poll valuation provisions. So to just kind of clarify, generally speaking, my preference is for the city's campaign finance system to mirror state election rules where possible. So I'm not inclined to institute a different poll valuation provision. We did not include all of the Citizen Campaign Committee recommendations, but we believe two recommendations warrant further research and consideration by the auditor and or the city attorney before being added to the code. The first is recommendation number 30 for a speedy hearings process. The city attorney wanted to spend more time reviewing the matter before it was entered into code. And the second is the non-participating candidate reserve funds for runoff elections, better known as earmarking. That was recommendation number 37. The concept certainly has merit, but we question whether it has received the vetting that it really needs. Would like to think through the impact on non-participating candidates. We have not yet received a lot of guidance from council, and the concept is not as clear as we would like it to be. In other matters, after receiving feedback from council, we did not raise the qualifying contribution requirement, and we continue to not allow credit and debit card transactions for qualifying contributions. So finally, before I take questions and comments, I'd like to put in a brief plug for the Campaign Commission. We are seeking nominations. It has 7 members. Currently, there is 1 vacancy, and 4 terms expire in September. We will be having an open recruitment for all 5 positions beginning in June. We are asking you to encourage any potential members to apply. We're asking that they be interested in election processes. They have the ability to be neutral and act in a thoughtful advisory capacity and are willing to meet once a month. So, without further ado.
And if I could respectfully submit the notion that they also have experience in campaigns.
That would be good.
That would be very helpful. There are a couple of potential amendments that, and two of us are, I think just two, is there three? Two amendments?
I have a question. But
okay. Would you like your question or the amendments first? Okay. Commissioner Fritz.
I move the amendment to Section 210.130 that was circulated to your office, adding a new subsection G on reporting and reserving funds for general or special runoff elections. What this does essentially is allow non-participating candidates to raise money during the primary that would be set aside and be able to be used during a runoff. It was recommended by the Commission. The Auditor's Office, as was just stated, it was not entirely comfortable with the language. My office has worked with the City Attorney's Office and with Commissioner Fisher's office, and we believe that the language has no constitutional free speech issues and will work as intended. The amendment addresses issues of fairness for non-participating candidates, particularly in a shortened special election situation.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Council discussion. Is anyone wishes to testify on this proposed amendment? All right. Please call the roll on the amendment.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Amendment is approved. I propose to amend Code Section 2.10.020C that strikes the first sentence and replaces with the following: if the council determines that the fund contains monies in excess of the amount estimated by the council to be necessary to make payments to certified candidates in the next fiscal year, then council may return the excess amount to other city funds during the budget process, and council may elect not to appropriate funds to the fund for the next fiscal year under Section 2.10.040.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Anyone seek to testify on this amendment? Please call the roll.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
The reason I'm supporting this amendment is because it's my understanding that if there were more candidates who qualified than there was money available, that at that time, the council would be required to allocate the money because we have the program. So it does seem reasonable, especially in these economic times, to make sure that the money is being put to use rather than sitting in the bank. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Amendment is approved. Further discussion on the package in front of us?
The recommendation of the commission about raising a higher threshold for serial candidates, that's not in here, is it?
May I address that?
Well, is there a yes or no? Is it?
It's not in there.
It's okay. Not.
That's all I need. But, you
know. And I asked for that not to be put in there because their suggestion was to raise it to 1,100 rather than 1,000. All of the candidates who qualified in the last election got 1,100 except for me, and I had a month that I could have gotten another 50 donations should I have been required. So my suggestion is to leave it at the 1,000. We've shortened the period of the length of time that candidates have to raise the money, so that already makes it more difficult. And if we are going to increase it, I think a 50% increase would be more reasonable than just an extra 100. So that in the future, I think that should be something we can consider. But for this time, we're shortening the length of time that candidates have to qualify from the middle of July to the beginning of September through the end of January.
Here, I have a question. I think I know the answer, but I think it's useful to have this exchange just so you can put it on the record. Under the proposal that we're going to vote on today, mm-hmm. could you describe for me under what circumstances a participating candidate can switch races and at what point in the process?
Andrew, I'm going to ask you to address that because you were involved in the conversations around.
And that was the amendment, I believe, to 210-210?
I'll defer to you.
Okay.
you're the expert. It's 3:30, and I'm just trying to understand. And the scenario, I guess, that I just would like you to clarify is a candidate decides to file for a contested race against an incumbent, and at some point in the process, a vacancy opens up. To what extent can that candidate switch races, and what rules apply?
Well, we didn't address that in the ordinance, okay. But there was a suggestion that they be able to carry their qualifying contributions over.
That, so you do not address
that's
that?
That's not in the ordinance, no.
Okay, and so under current law, what's the rule?
Well, we had the situation with one candidate, and he had to dispose of all his contributions, withdraw his declaration of intent, and then switch to the other race.
I see. And there's no proposed change of that rule?
There's no proposed change to that, no.
The only thing I would add is that my legislative intent, anyway, as one person on the council, is that we do adhere to state law. We do adhere to state definitions. And my experience as a candidate where we appeared to have a different definition of certain campaign expenditures and eligibility interpretations, I found to be not part of my original intent when I supported this and ran on supporting this and does not remain part of my intent moving forward. So I was very pleased to hear you say that your administrative rules would, to the degree practical and possible,
yes.
adhere to state standards. So thank you for that.
Yes.
I just wanted to highlight some of the other changes from the Commission's recommendation and also to thank the Commission, for my perspective, for their very diligent work over many
Absolutely.
Years. We are proposing to prohibit the use of proceeds during the general election period from sale of assets purchased from the primary election period, because candidates now have the capacity to purchase something expensive in the primary and then have extra funds to use in the general, and that isn't equitable. We're clarifying the language that allows candidates to withdraw as a candidate from the general election immediately after the primary election without having to repay funds received from the primary election period if for some reason after running for 9 months they decide that they're unable to continue, they shouldn't have to pay back money, and that would save the city money. We're proposing to begin the qualifying period on the first day to file for office rather than August 1st. We're proposing to allow deficit spending by participating candidates only during the first 30 days after filing the declaration of intent, rather than allowing deficit spending any time up to the time of certification. And we're allowing, proposing to allow candidates to keep campaign materials such as yard signs and banners without having to pay for them, but require that if these materials are used in a subsequent campaign, that they're reported as an in-kind contribution at 100% of their value if the candidate uses them.
Yes.
Wow, that was
That's
great.
Accurate. Good yeah, really, very good.
All right, how many people have signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify? God bless you. Please call the roll.
This is a non-emergency.
Sorry, we don't get a vote today.
I would say, Lamont, before you leave, that I'm the only one here, I guess, that didn't vote for this. Not everybody was on the council at the time. And the experience I've had from the point at which I voted no till now has been a fairly uniquely unpleasant one.
I'll see what I can do about that.
I was actually going to speak to that a little bit, okay. about the kind of institutional kinds of blowback that has occurred because of that. But some of that is just the nature of politics, and when you don't agree with some folks, I mean, you just don't always necessarily have them like that, and I get that, and that's okay. The part that's troubled me is frankly the commission and the what has felt like me undue advocacy on their part. It's deeply troubling to me. I get people need to do their jobs, and I get that they need to do it well. But I also get, as I spoke to earlier here on another issue, there's a difference between when you are creating policy and advocating and actually administering it. And I put on different hats. I'm clear in my mind when I'm doing each and when I should do one and when it would be inappropriate to do another. And I don't feel like that's always occurred in the administration of this program, and including your predecessor. It has been deeply troubling to me since this has passed, as to how it's been administered in the auditor's office. And it feels more as though it has been an attempt to make it look as good as possible than to administer it fairly. And I will withhold specifics because I don't think I should have to at this point need to share that. But for me, the Amanda Fritz is the best example of the program. But for that one good example, there are a number of really, really poor mm-hmm. examples and really shockingly poor decisions made in the administration of this program. I've tried my level best to work to improve it, to make it fair. And as I've done that, including the special election that occurred when Commissioner Stan left, I felt really undue, improper influence from the commission and at times even the auditor's office. In even that advocacy in how we handled special elections. I have a view about privately funded candidates that's clearly at odds with some on the commission, and that's okay. But I don't think it's okay to administer the program from that point of view. I really don't. And I oftentimes have bitten my tongue in the past and just been very careful about being overly critical, but I'm really looking forward not only to you being our new auditor, but having a fresh set of eyes on this program. And I actually will have higher expectations of you in the administration of this, given that you weren't the advocate for it than I did your predecessor, who I greatly admire on mm-hmm. many levels. But this was one area that I think he had a blind spot. and or two. And I hope you and I have not talked about this,
right.
And to the extent we're having a discussion, this is done in public for the first time, and I just hope that you recognize some of those errors and ironically, following some of my suggestions, I think would actually strengthen the program in the public's eye, because I think there is some skepticism in how this program has been administered and decisions that have been made, not only in its inception, but in particular the mayoral election last time was shocking to me. And so